This is a beginning or introductory class to insight meditation. And insight meditation is from the Buddhist tradition, although we don't require or ask or expect anyone to change their traditions to fit this meditation. In other words, we're not asking you to become anything other than what you are. And insight meditation is also known as mindfulness meditation. Sometimes you'll hear it referred to as that, and often it's known as Vipassana meditation, with a V, V-I-P-A-S-S-A-N-A. All of those words mean sight into, or insight, or a revelation of understanding life in a different way, in a different context than what we know it to be now. My name is Rodney Smith, and I'll be leading these classes for the next 6 weeks, and we have a day-long associated with this series. I hope everyone has set aside that day in October, which I can't remember when it is. Anyone know? The 26th of October, and we'll meet out at Bastyr University for a day-long of this meditation, which is the kind of the culmination of our 6 weeks together. So please put that in your calendar and know that you've already paid for that in your $50. One of the aspects of this particular tradition, which I appreciate the most, is that we hold the costs of the classes very low, so that everyone, regardless of a person's ability to pay, can come and take part if they so wish. And to that end, if you can't even afford the $50, you're welcome to come and for nothing. So I hope no one feels like they're getting or paying too much for this series, at the end of which I think you, if you apply yourself, you would have received a tool which will, or potentially can, affect the rest of your life. It's that simple. Now, a little bit about the meditation hall etiquette, and I didn't expect anyone to know this, so I'm not going to grade you down. But if you wouldn't mind, at this first opportunity with a break or for a walking period that we all take, leaving your shoes outside the door or just inside the door in the coat room there. This is a it's a symbolic way for us to sort of leave the work life, our busy lives, behind in terms of our footwear, and hopefully in terms of our psychic footwear as well, and to come in with sort of something new, a new attitude perhaps, and to release ourselves from some of the hectic pace that many of us face in the course of our day. So that's the reason for the small, and it creates a small intention to slip off the day's activities in the form of shoes. So if you remember to do that. Now, how these classes will unfold are very simple. We'll come in, it'll start right at 7 o'clock, and we'll have a half an hour sitting meditation, which I will introduce you to tonight. And in that first 15 minutes of the meditation, I will give you instructions for that week. And each week I will add a component level of instruction to the previous week, so that at the end of the 6 weeks you'll have the entire range of instructions for insight meditation. And then we'll apply that throughout the week in terms of our sitting, daily sitting practice, which I will instruct you on, but also homework. I'm a taskmaster in terms of homework. I don't grade it, but I do expect you to do it. Sometimes, because the cost of this is held very low, people often downgrade their expectation or what they think they may get from this series of classes accordingly. And if we marked up the price fashionably high, I think that would probably get you motivated in ways that this lower price does not. But be that what it may, I would rather keep it low and let everybody come than crank out effort and sincerity through the price of the course. However, please know that this whole series will only be based and will only be as thorough and complete as you are willing to involve yourself in it. And so there will be a lot of extracurricular activities that I will suggest, and they all have the intention that by the end of these 6 weeks you'll know something about meditation. Hopefully that's why you've come. Now, I don't know, if you think of the thing that you've applied yourself most to, maybe it was a course or a lesson, or maybe it was your job or whatever at some point, and felt the benefits of what that application of effort and sincerity gave you at the end of that period of time. And if you do the same for the meditation, you'll find an extraordinary difference that your life will take on, given that effort. But it will be your effort. All I can do is encourage you and give you the instructions. I can't force the effort. And so the effort has to come within you. And I'm hoping that the fact that you've shown up means something, although it's not always the case. Some of you, I recognize, have shown up again and again and again. And that's fine. I've had people take this series a dozen times, and they say that each time they hear it in a different way, and their readiness deepens as well. So you're welcome. If this is your first time, you're welcome. If this is your 10th time, it matters not. For we all begin anew each time we sit down. So although this comes from the Buddhist tradition, and my own background has been that I've been practicing this meditation for almost 30 years and was a Buddhist monk in Thailand and Burma, Southeast Asia, for 4 years, and have spent many, many, many years on silent retreat in various meditation centers around the country. This meditation is really not about becoming a Buddhist. It's about learning about who we are and being able to connect with life in a way that perhaps has remained distant to us. When you listen to the sound of that traffic, is that a Buddhist sound? Is that a Buddhist noise? Is that a Christian noise? The fact that we can connect with our senses and become alive around the data as it comes in, and to bring forth that sense of awareness and spontaneity and creativity around that aliveness is very much what this practice points towards. And so, although this is within a particular tradition, a religious tradition, it's really not religious. It's spiritual, but not religious. And I hope you can get or glean the difference between that as these weeks evolve. Now, what I like to do early on is to hear what your expectations are about coming to a meditation class. Then I can sort of address my instructions accordingly. So if anyone would like to share what is it that they expect from these 6 weeks and this day long, I would very much like to hear. Anyone? Yes.
More of an ability to be with myself.
The gentleman says, more of an ability to be with myself. And when you say that, do you feel like you're not with yourself most of the time?
A hard time being not slowing down and not being constantly in activity.
Yes.
Just being with me.
Yes. So a sense of speed and activity. One book, I think by Thurber or somebody, said that Michael lived 5 feet away from his body. And for some of us, that's quite an adventure. It's like, well, I wouldn't mind doing that. But we're not having an out-of-body experience. We're having an in-the-body experience in this meditation. And we're trying to connect with ourselves. And what we'll find is this: the speed of our thought, the speed of our intentionality, the speed in anticipation of what life will bring next, not what life is bringing now, but what the next thing I have to do bites in to me being present with myself here and now. In fact, one of our first homeworks will be to pick an activity that you do every day and just do it without thinking about the next thing you're going to do while you're doing it. And that will be a crisis for you. It will establish a kind of struggle that you probably didn't know you were waging moment after moment. Because, in fact, if you think about it, what happens is that we wake up and we think, oh my God, I've got to get breakfast and get into the car and race to work. We do that, and on the way to work, we're thinking about what we're having to do when we get to work. When we're at work, we're worrying about when we'll get home and be with our family. On the way home, we're worried about dinner. We get home, dinner's late. We're worried about eating dinner in time so that we can get to bed and so that we can get up early the next day and start all over again. This is... If you watch where you live, 5 feet of your body is much closer than you might think. So to live with ourselves, to be present, to regain access to our experience of being awake, to the senses as they come on in, is very much where this meditation points. So thank you for that. Anyone else's expectation? Yes.
You know, when I'm doing a job, I can concentrate. You know, I'm concentrating, I'll think about something else. But when I try to do something that's just solely in my mind.
Right.
Nanosecond?
Right.
I'd like to improve that.
The ability to focus.
Internally.
Yeah. Right.
But it's
the ability to focus internally. Right. Okay. So this meditation certainly does carry that. The ability to focus, to steady our minds, to hold our minds on one object, not just internally, but externally, because what you can hold your mind upon and rest it upon, be it internally and externally, you wake it up to. You can then see what's there. And most of us, it's not so much the ability to see what's there. It's more like we're riding in a car and we're looking out the side window rather than the front window. Everything's kind of a blur. But think of a single thing you do, a hobby, a job, a relationship, a task, an activity, that wouldn't be enhanced by your ability to focus upon it. And you can immediately see that if this meditation moves us in that direction, it could be beneficial. And it does. Thank you. Someone else? Yes. Read.
Yes, but somehow that seems like my equivalent of drinking alcohol to calm my emotions. And I'm hoping to find a different way to turn my mind off.
So this gentleman says that he lives in his mind, and the only way that he can learn to turn his mind off is to read, and that seems almost an addiction to him. And he wants to know if there's another way that he can live without so much pain and struggle. These are not setups. Yes. No, the meditation very much does that. In matter of fact, that's the heart of what it does. It begins to show us the difference between thinking, which is a perpetual activity that we do unconsciously, and when we're resting, it's called dreaming, and when we're not, it's called ponderance or reflection or any other numerous ways that we describe the thinking process. But we live immersed in the thoughts and representations of the world, the conceptual and abstract images of the world, which is a thought, right? When we think about something. And what we're going to do in this meditation is to move in front, before the thought, where the actual sense data comes in terms of an experience prior to thought. When you just hear, just smell, just see, just feel, so that the mind is resting upon just the absolute bare essential of our experience. And then we will know the difference between a mind that receives the world and rests comfortably, harmoniously with that, because that's before problems. Then we start thinking about it and involving ourselves in a whole set of details and circumstances that has nothing at all to do with the data. It usually has to do with some neurotic need or fear that we have in relationship to the data. And that creates the problems that make us so immersed or involved or indulgent in our lives. So if we learn to just move our attention to rest upon the bare sensation of our experience, we will suddenly know perhaps contentment, simplicity, harmony. These are not abstract words. These are immediately experiential references of the meditation. When we live not at the expense of our lives in terms of thinking, but right up with the data itself. And so we're going to be getting into that tonight. It's a very good point, and this practice certainly points in that direction. Others' expectations? Yes. Yes, she has done some prior insight meditation and was hoping that there was a synergistic way that coming together would help propel and motivate her practice so that it could sustain itself. And this is very much a part of the teaching of this particular tradition. And it's called Sangha. Sangha in Buddhism is a community of people who are practicing in like direction. So with like views and like intentions. What you'll find is that there are very few people in the world who are interested in genuinely being kind and genuinely knowing and facing their lives in very matter-of-fact ways. There are very few people who want to live with some kind of compassion and openness and inclusiveness. We all mouth those words, but very few of us actually have the intention to live that way or set a course in our life to live that way. In this meditation, that's exactly what we're doing. It is a heartfelt meditation. It is from the heart that this meditation will enter, not from your mind's activity, but from your heart's willingness to see what's here. And that's what this meditation will point in the direction we're going to be taking. Now, what I ask you to do, all these words are just words to you. I ask you to suspend your disbelief for 6 weeks and a day long. And after all of that, then you can then judge the practice. You will have had the whole range of practice and sufficient experience to say, this is something I want to do, or this has no meaning to me whatsoever. But put forth the energy. Don't doubt or bemoan the difficulty. Everyone who has ever done this meditation has had to go through the beginning phases of it. If you're a skier, you can't expect to go to the black diamond run right off the top. You have to learn how to ski, and there's a lot of falls along the way. So that's what I'm here for. And not only am I here, but we're going to have a whole list of mentors, people who have had 5 or more years experience, who you can sign up with. We'll do this on the third week, so that you can have someone besides me to talk to about the meditation, a partner, a friend, a part of the Sangha that is an ever-growing Sangha. We have over 3,000 names on our mailing list now. I've offered some 40 of these classes in the course of 10 or 11 years. I don't know how many thousands of people that is, but it's usually this number. I don't even know where the new people come from. Every class, I think that's all they could possibly. And somehow more people come. I also want to introduce my wife and partner, Ellen, here, who is a meditator of 20 years duration and is heading off to do 6 weeks of intensive meditation, leaving me as alone and unable to cook for myself. But that's another story. And she is here for, if I'm too busy at the end of class with somebody, then please go up to her as a resource and ask her the questions you would ask me. I think you'll find probably better answer than I would. Anyway. Other expectations about the class? Yes.
I'm looking for help with more discipline in my spare time. Working on the problem, but things like only eating when I'm hungry or turning the TV off and spending time with my kids,
yes,
instead of watching things I don't care about.
Right. So this sense of discipline is missing in your life, and you want some way to bring that focused resolve into your life. Hmm?
Yeah.
That's very much a part of the meditation, because this meditation requires, for anyone who has attempted it, requires an inward discipline. There's no doubt about it. And sometimes you're going to get up and you're going to start to sit, and it's not going to make any sense to you whatsoever as to why you're doing it. Your mind will be jumping around like a wild monkey. You'll be tired. You'll think of 10,000 other things that you'd rather be doing and 9,000 that you should be doing. You'll be full of doubt, and there you'll have to sit. Because that's where everybody sits, in the fire of that. And if you're willing to do that, you'll find that there comes an ease, and that nothing that your mind can bring up over time can dissuade you from doing what you really need to do. What happens, and the reason that we are undisciplined, is that we have competing desires. Part of our mind wants to do this, and a recalcitrant part wants to do something else. And we don't have any way of holding those two competing demands. And so we kind of give in to the one that is more pleasure-oriented rather than to the one that has more meaning. So we're going to establish a track where we understand what the mind can throw at us, not just in meditation, but throughout the day, and yet we can pick or sense the reasonability of what is being said in the direction that we want to take over the competing demands that may be coming up. This isn't a panacea to everybody's problems, but it makes every problem workable. That's very different. It won't end your problems. It will allow you to have a tool so that you can work with them effectively towards your advantage. So that life turns from having a problem-centered struggle focus to challenges. Yeah, challenges continue to occur, but there's not this angst and stress associated with every turn in our life. So every night when we come in, we'll meet here again right at 7. We'll sit from 7 to 7:30. The instructions will be for the first 15 minutes of the sitting. So try to arrive on time if you possibly can. I know some of you get home late and have difficulty doing that. If you come in a few minutes late, that's okay. Just be quiet and sensitive to the people who are already here sitting. Come in whenever you can. I'll give the instructions. And then at 7:30, I'll give a 45-minute, half an hour to 45-minute Dharma talk. A talk, Dharma, D-H-A-R-M-A. That's not Dharma and Greg. They co-opt the name, but Dharma is the essentially the way things are. That's a Pali word. Pali is the, it's actually a Sanskrit word. Pali is the language of that was spoken during the Buddha's time. And Dharma is the expression of life as it actually is, and then there's the mind's life is the expression of what we think it's about. And the difference between those contains all of our problems. So what we're going to do is release ourselves from the abstract conceptual model and live the real thing. That's basically what this meditation does, is it drops you into reality. That's all. Any other questions or comments? Or so then at I'll finish what the evening's 2 hours will be like. There'll be a Dharma talk for 45 minutes. Then we'll do a walking meditation that I'll teach tonight. And then we'll come back in with question and answers, and I'll give you homework, and we'll be off. Here's the first homework. Perhaps the hardest one I give. Sleep 8 hours a night. Nothing in this practice, nothing can be accomplished when you are tired. You have to have had sufficient sleep. In fact, we have probably squandered most of our life, at least our spiritual growth life, because we have had, at least one of the reasons, is because we have been so fatigued and tired and stressed throughout our day. So yawns start occurring. So I would suggest and expect you to take full accountability for that. First thing, all right, get 8 hours sleep a night. That's a friendly thing to do. So if you'd only need, and you know how much sleep you need, not how much sleep you get, but how much sleep you really need. And if some people don't need 8 hours, some people need 7, some people need 9. So I say 8, but get how much sleep you need. Right? And start that tonight. I'll get you out of here in plenty of time. So any questions before we get going on the meditation technique or anything I've said, or anybody like to bring forth whatever their expectations are? Yes.
You said that so few people are kind. That sounds pretty pessimistic. What makes you say that?
So few people dedicate their life to kindness. Kindness comes from all of us from time to time. When we're settled, when we're with somebody, when we're not running in our course of stream events, kindness comes out. But not very many people dedicate their life to kindness. That is the most important thing. The premium quality, right? Well, that's what this practice does. It sets the agenda, priority number one, to be kind. Self-kind is the hardest form of kindness. The Buddha said you could look all over the world and find no one more deserving of kindness than yourself. And the first thing we have to do is learn how to be self-kind, because everything else, if we haven't learned that, is pretentious. And so that's really what this practice is going to do. It's going to be about self-kindness. You know, if I asked you to think of the last kind thing you did, most people have a lot of difficulty thinking of anything they've done in that direction. Not because they don't do it, but because they don't give themselves credit for doing it. Because we don't hold ourselves in our heart with any sense of dignity, of deserving even the word kindness. So some of you are getting, or will get, very fidgety when we start moving this word into the applicability and intentionality of our lives. But think, kindness. I mean, what are we running from here? And underneath that, warm heart, affection, compassion, quietness, connectedness, all of the spiritual words that we so long to have a glimpse of, to be connected with, to have some intimation of, are here for our feast. But we have to learn how to access them. This practice is not so much about changing you as it is about releasing everything you build up pretentiously, superficially, and coming back to the organic and real sense of your worthiness, of your human quality. And I'll have a whole talk that does nothing but address that particular component of the practice. You know how you can tell whether a meditation practice is worth learning? Is if it has you in its heart, and it is an expression of well-being for all beings, for all people. That it doesn't divide, it doesn't create more struggle or conflict. That's how you know. That's how you know if something fosters the heart, the aliveness of the heart, if it brings the heart out. Not in some romantic way, not in some superficial way, but deeply felt resonance of basic human warmth. That's what we're talking about. So I'll shut my eyes, and everybody who wants to run out of the room. Some of you that resonates with, and some of you I can see that's not what you're here for at all. But that's okay. So, okay. Now, what we're going to do is have a demonstration of how to sit. Right? And then we're going to sit. That's what we're here for. All right? How we're going to meditate. Now, let me tell you, when you come in, one of the things I would suggest you're doing, you're welcome to sit on the floor, but I would have pillows and things for you to sit on the floor. You're also welcome to sit on chairs, but I would have something to cushion your behind in that chair. Metal is, that's it. You want something there to allow yourself to be a little soft. Okay, this isn't an austere practice. This isn't, you know, this isn't like, I don't know, it's not a ascetic practice. This is a practice in which we are going to learn how to sit in a very straight and formal way and hold our bodies as still as possible so that our minds can be seen. All the jumping around of our minds. So the body needs to be still so that the mind can be seen. So if I could ask Ellen to come up and demonstrate the different sitting. Let me just point out what these different pillows and things are. This is called it's a round pillow. It's called a zafu. And you're welcome to stand up if you can't see. This flat pillow is called a support cushion. And we'll show you what all this is about. This is this big one for people to sit upon is called a zabutan. Zabutan. They all have to be color coordinated. This is a sitting bench for a different style of sitting, and we'll demonstrate both of those, and you can make one of these pretty easily. And if people want to come up and take a measurement or something, they're welcome to do that. And then, of course, there's always the chair. And you're welcome to sit on any of these. And there's no one that's better than another. You're not a second-class meditator if you decide to sit on a chair and not on the floor. Okay? So, first I'll have Ellen show you how to... You want to sit straddle? Why don't you just straddle this like that? One of the styles is a straddle style like that, where when you sit on it, and women in particular, because their hips are usually wider, can do that quite easily. And notice that it can be a very comfortable position. The back is straight, slightly bowed, and head and the chin and navel are in a straight line. And if I were to take a cord that went right through her vertebrae and out the top of her head and pulled on it, the way you would line up if I pulled on that is the way you would want to sit. The shoulders need to be unrounded. Okay? That's the single greatest mistake somebody makes in sitting, is that their shoulders are rounded. The posture of the body represents an attitude that we are sitting with. And most people are uncomfortable with an open attitude. Try sometime when you're just walking down the street to correct your posture so that your shoulders are back, and suddenly you find this new sense of openness and perhaps vulnerability, maybe fear comes in. Why? Because we have created a new attitude from our posture. Our posture holds an attitude. So when we sit, we want to be as open as possible. What we're saying is, okay, whatever is here, I'm not going to be guarded or defensive in whatever is here. Whatever is here is fine to show itself to me. Just let it come. It's fine. Okay, now, the typical way that somebody will sit on a zafu is like this. And that, she's not using a support cushion now. She's just using the zafu. Her legs, her feet are side by side. And her hands are just resting on her knees. They can be in your lap or whatever. Her legs are side by side like that. Yeah. But they can be crossed, right? In a half lotus position or whatever is comfortable. Again, her back is slightly bent and bowed, and the body is straight once more. Yes.
If she could turn 90 degrees to the right, it might be easier for people to see.
Okay. Yep. Like that?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. Now, let me show you how the support cushion works. The support cushion, now she has to turn 90 degrees to the left. Turn around so that people can see how it works. All right, so, no, all right, yeah. And just lift that up there, like that.
I've got it.
Okay, that's not good. So that tips the cushion forward. And the reason that's very nice is the tip of the cushion forward brings her buttocks out and naturally bows her back so that it's a good, solid, stable posture. So the support cushion can be very helpful in coming to that. We'll demonstrate the bench now. The bench has a natural slant to it. And that natural slant, of course, it allows the back to bend. She'll do it from both sides. Okay? And that her legs go underneath the legs of the bench like that. And
the
tricky
thing about a bench is the height.
Yes.
Like this bench is too high for me.
So you need a bench that fits your particular body type. There. You see how it's done? Again, the back and the head straight. Yes.
For those of us who wouldn't handle hands off, can you buy these?
I'll talk about that. Yeah, I'll talk about that. Okay, finally, we're going to do a chair, sitting on the chair, for those of you who, if perhaps we could have this chair here.
But this one's okay.
Not really, no. I want them to be on the chair that they're on so that they can, there's a. I'll give you a cushion.
Thank you.
Okay. So now sitting on a chair is as difficult, if you do it correctly, as sitting on the floor. So you have to do this correctly. The feet are flat, parallel to each other. Your back is not resting against the back of the chair. Notice that there is space between the back of the chair and her back, so that there's not a slumping quality to it. Again, the back is straight and is bowed as it was before. And so she's essentially free from the back of the chair and just resting with her feet flat, her hands relaxed. Sometimes the chair might be too small or too large for you, and you need to adjust the floors and the seat so that you work it. Yeah, there. So just putting a pillow under your feet like she's doing can raise your feet up and make it more right angles. Okay, any question about the sitting or how? Yes.
How do you know if the bench is too big for you or too small? Can you just, is it a comfort thing or?
It is pretty much a comfort thing.
Well, it does look like it's really that comfortable.
If you're lower.
If you'd like to try this one,
okay.
You're welcome to try it. We'll sit right now, so you're welcome to come in Try, you can try any of these apparatus if you'd like.
The same thing with the zafus, like depending on their own body, you know, some people sit higher, some people sit lower. And it's good to experiment if you decide to sit on the floor at all.
So let me tell you about one vendor of these, of all this. And that's Carolina Morning Design. And the reason that I have this out and no one else is, first of all, it's a cottage industry. It's not, these are friends of mine, and she has had cancer, has been in remission for some time. And she and her husband make these cushions and benches, and they live in Appalachia, literally and figuratively. There's not a lot of, monetarily, there's not a lot there. And so I just, because they make good quality, very reasonably priced benches and sitting apparatus, that's what we have some folders out. And if you'd like to take one, you're welcome to. Don't take one if you're not interested in buying one, because I only have a limited number of these flyers. But please do if you are. Yes. You need to bring your own cushions. I won't have zafus, no. No. So you need to bring your own cushions or whatever you have, sometimes just even a bed pillow could work.
Folded wool blankets.
Right. All right. All right, so now we're going to sit. Okay, so now we're going to learn to practice meditation. The first thing, and perhaps the most important thing, is to release yourself from the day's activities. Just allow the day to fall back in memory. Don't bring it so current. The conversations that were incomplete, the work that's yet to be done, the tasks you have to do, just let all of that go. Let that be when you take off your shoes and leave them at the door, walk in with a sense of newness and a sense of release from all of the hectic ways that we contain and force ourselves. Now, closing the eyes, if closing the eyes is difficult, you're welcome to open your eyes a little bit and look down at the floor and keep looking at a particular focus on the floor, maybe 2 or 3 feet ahead of yourself. But most people in this tradition close their eyes. So either way, key word in meditation is relax, relaxation. So I'll keep bringing us back to relaxation. Soften your eyes so that your eyes aren't squinched. Loosen your jaw so your teeth aren't clenched. Drop your shoulders away from the neck and unround them. And now soften the belly, so that it moves effortlessly with each inhalation and exhalation. Moving in on the out-breath and moving out on the in-breath. Just begin to notice the physical sensations of the belly moving as it brings a breath in and releases the breath. It makes a movement. And you can feel there's a physical sensation associated with that movement. Now, where we want to rest our attention is either at the location of that movement, so that we're just noticing the physical sensations of the belly in each breath, or at our nose tip, as the breath comes in and out, it also leaves a very refined and subtle sensation of the air passing over the nose tip. So locate where it is that you're most comfortably resting your attention, and then keep it there. Don't move from one location to another. Most people find the belly the best place to be because it's farther away from the thinking mind, and the nose is too close to that. So now we're just going to take a few minutes, 5 or 10 minutes, resting our attention on the sensations of our breath. And every time your mind gets lost in thought, which it will many times in this 5 or 10 minutes, many times, it's not your fault that your mind left the breath. Your only responsibility is that when you notice that your mind has left the breath, first come back to the sense of physical relaxation. Just being relaxed and at ease with yourself. And then allow the breath to emerge from that sense of physical relaxation. It doesn't matter if it has been several minutes before you catch the fact that you've been thinking. Whenever you catch that fact, you can release yourself from that and come back. If it's helpful to give yourself a soft mental label like rising as the belly rises, or falling when the breath falls, as a way to point your attention towards the experience of what that means, then you can do that. Or in, if you're at the nose tip, out. Feeling the physical sensations of the breath. The definition of meditation is knowing that it's occurring, knowing that the sensation is occurring, knowing that sound is occurring, knowing the knowing of the sensation. You know when you're there. You know when you're feeling the in-breath, when you're feeling the out-breath. Not just opening the eyes gently. Don't try to come out of the meditation too quickly. Look around with soft eyes. Let your eyes be soft. Let your mind be soft. And just see from this vantage point. The world is softer. Before the noise comes in, before the rancor, before the stress and what you have to do, just let the mind be still in this moment. So would anybody like to share how that was for them? Yes.
I have a monkey mind.
You have a what?
A monkey mind.
Yes. You're not alone.
Yeah,
I've had
nothing
but struggles with meditation. Yes. Okay. So. Tonight was so easy. Let me say that everyone who ever sits down is going to spend most of their time thinking early on, okay? So I don't have to ask you whether you were on your breath most of the time. I know you weren't, okay? And that's okay. Everyone who ever sits down has to deal with this. What happens is that we're not used to being able or willing to focus. And what we think is more enticing and more interesting is where our thoughts are going. So we'll think about what has been, or where we're going to be, what we're going to be doing tomorrow, or some other struggle or problem that we need to solve. Very little time is actually spent connecting with our lives. And this is the fact when you're meditating. What do you think it's like when you're not meditating? You can see the problem. In 5 minutes, you have gotten an insight that is very deep and very profound. And I will talk to you for a moment about the profundity of this particular insight. It's not a light one. Oftentimes, we don't realize that we're not in control of our thinking. We think we think. We have control over it. We influence it. I decide to think. I decide not to think. Did you ask yourself to think while you were sitting? You had one instruction and one instruction only. Rest your attention on the sensation of breath. And you will find in the course of this meditation, this week and in weeks to come, that you are unable to do that. If you are in charge of your thinking, why couldn't you do that? Why couldn't you say, I'll stay here for 5 minutes and check back later? Because, in fact, thoughts happen. They think themselves often. Do we ask ourselves to dream? They think themselves because they are another conditioned activity that we aren't even aware is a conditioned activity. You walk by a shop, marketers are aware that it's an activity. They know how to sell you things. You walk by a shop and your mind lights upon something and thoughts come out. Oh, I wonder if I can, on and on. But in meditation, what we're trying to do is discover a new ability to focus. So the first thing we have to do is bring enormous patience to our inability to focus. And that is a huge undertaking, because we have patience for everything but ourselves. And yet in this practice, we have to have patience for our inability, because that's what it's all about, is retraining the ability of the mind to come and reside and stay stationary and stabilize on one thing. And next week or the week after, I will give you a talk on why and how different meditations unfold. Different things like mantra meditation or staring at a candle flame or lots of tantric meditation. All these different kinds of meditations that we hear about have different aspects to them. And I'll talk about those, and I'll talk about insight meditation as well, so that you'll understand why we're doing exactly what we're doing and why this training is so important if we're ever to get the problem resolved from our mind just thinking itself throughout our life. You don't realize how out of control the mind is until you sit down with it for 5 minutes. It's a very sobering understanding. But that is an insight. Remember, we are practicing insight meditation. The point of the meditation is to show us the condition of ourselves. The first condition that we all face is, as the woman said, the monkey mind. Don't be discouraged by that. You've had an insight. That's actually to your advantage. Yes, someone had a question? Yes. Well, the question was about physical discomfort and distractions, and, you know, ergonomics is a whole field in and of itself, and the proper way to sit and the proper way to hold the body. But you're going to find that the way you hold the body accompanies an attitude or way you hold yourself. And I am encouraging you, or will encourage you in the course of these weeks together, for you to hold your body in a way that allows an expressive openness, inclusiveness. And it doesn't just start and end on the meditation pillow. It's also when we're at work or walking down the street, which we're going to get to in a minute. So correcting the body posture is often the first and most important focus in the meditation of correcting ourselves into a view and attitude that allows the meditation to even root itself within us. Yes.
What is wrong with following the breath?
What is wrong?
Or why, you know, you say to focus either at the nostrils or the belly.
Yes.
No.
In the whole breath. Why not follow the whole breath throughout the body?
No.
Right. Because if you watch where it is that you most feel the breath, you'll feel it most readily at the nose tip and at the belly. When it gets into the chest, it's not quite the same sensation. You can try that and work with it if you rest very nice, but it's also in movement. And what we want is to train yourself to be still with one particular object. And that's a whole series of different sensations up and down the body line from the nose to the belly. Now, it's not bad. It's okay. And as we begin to practice, you're very welcome to open to that. But just for this particular first couple of weeks, we're having you just stay with something that's just very exact and very refined and very stationary. And you'll find that even the breath itself isn't stationary at all. Although it's in the same place, there's a lot happening there. It's not one sensation, but many sensations. Yes, in the back. No, it's all through the nose. Yes. So you breathe in through the nose and out through the nose. Okay, now we're going to learn the other component part of the meditation, and that is walking meditation. Right? Now, before we stand up, walking meditation, why would we want to meditate while we're walking? Well, if meditation were only the half an hour that we did our practice in the morning or the evening, then it would be fine, except the rest of our life would have no context for being able to meditate from it at all. We need some way to bring the meditation into movement, some way to bridge the gap between sitting still and not moving and the activity that most of us do most of the time throughout the day. How is it that we can actually train the meditation into our lives while we're in movement? So we pick a very simple movement, walking, and we begin to establish the same willingness to come back to our body sensation. And this time, it's not the breath any longer. You let the breath go. It's the movement and sensation of the feet as they begin to move. And if you practice this, what you'll be finding is that when you're walking down the streets of Seattle or wherever you're from, there will, over time, become a natural way that you abide with yourself in movement. And you're just there, and the sounds of the city are going around, and people are talking, and all of the different signs and distractions are still there, but you're very settled and at ease with yourself as you're just walking down the street. So this has to be practiced in the same way that sitting meditation has to be practiced. Now, I forgot to say one thing. Next week, it's fine for people to start. Okay? So people can come new next week. After that, it's not. We will have gone too far after week two for new people to start. So if you know somebody who would like to start, that's fine. They're welcome to start next week. After that, it's not. So, and if you're going to be missing more than 1 week of this time, it would probably be better that you would skip this series and do another series. You can miss one, and you can go to the webpage, our seattleinsight.org, seattleinsight, all one word, .org, and you can download the talk of the week you missed and the homework, and that'll be up on the web soon, the week following. But the interaction and the question and being here in the class cannot be replicated with just downloading a talk. So try not to miss more than 1 week, and try not to miss any if you possibly can. So now we're going to do walking meditation. So if everyone would just stand up. Now look ahead of yourself to see that you can take a step without stepping on someone or something. Now for walking meditation, you're going to keep your eyes open, right? But for this exercise, I'd like you to close your eyes, because I want you to get a feeling inside of what's going on. Again, in meditation, we want to bring our attention to the level of experience, not thoughts about the experience, not where we're going, in other words, but the actual process of moving. Usually when we walk, we're not thinking about the walking, the experience of walking. We're thinking about where our walking is going to take us, which is future. So what we're trying to do now is to relive or regain our foothold in the experience of what the walking really is, what the feeling of walking is, not where we're leading, not where it's leading us. That's such an important point, because we live predominantly in the future of our expectation, the sense of becoming something else other than what we are, or the regretting and bemoaning of the past of what we've been, but very infrequently where we actually are. And yet our whole sense of aliveness, our whole sense of awakefulness is really at the vortex between the past and the future, which is the now, here and now. And what we're doing in this meditation is regaining that sense of being able to stand here and now, and to know we're standing, to know we're walking, to know we're breathing. The sense of knowing is the important link between the mind racing off into abstract thinking and being present with itself at the level of sensation. So in walking, we're not interested in where we're going. We're interested in the process of walking itself. So as you stand, get a sense of the body, feeling what it's feeling. Close your eyes, if you would, just for this exercise. First, notice the posture. Notice how you stand. And just open the shoulders up and see what difference that makes in terms of how you feel about yourself. It doesn't feel comfortable for most of us to have open shoulders. It makes us feel like we're somehow vulnerable, or perhaps fear comes in. And yet, what are we afraid of? Now scan the body internally for areas of our judgment. Things we like, things we don't like. This is too big, this is too small. Things that work and don't work. As we age, the limitation of it. Just notice our relationship with our body. Now bring your attention down to where the feet touch the floor. And notice the contact of the feet to the floor. If you were telling somebody about the nature of that contact, what words come in your mind to describe it? Is it soft, hard, cold, hot, rough, smooth? Now, this is an important point. Notice the difference between the word rough, smooth, hot, cold, and the actual experience of where that word points. You see, the word can't capture the experience. And yet it's within the experience that our whole aliveness is rooted. And when we move to the word, we bypass the experience, thinking the word captures the experience. But what it really captures is a memory of an experience, which is no experience at all. And what we want to do is to recapture the experience at hand. Now I'm going to get ready to walk you through a step, so just follow my lead if you wouldn't mind. Shift your weight to the left side of the body, feeling the left side become heavier and the right side become lighter. Just notice that sensation. Now notice the right heel begin to rise, the sensation as the right toe rises and placing the right foot a couple of inches ahead of the left, and the placing of that foot on the floor, and then the shifting of the weight from the left side to the right side as the left heel begins to rise, the left toe, and then the movement of the left foot alongside the right foot, and then the redistribution of weight between the 2 feet. And now what I would like you to do, look down again to make sure you can take a step safely, is to take a step on your own, noticing all the incremental sensations associated with every component of that step. You're actually feeling the sensation, not thinking about. If there's a balance problem, just open your eyes. Okay, now from this point of view, you look like zombies. So open your eyes and let me know you're alive. And if you would please go back to your seat. Keep standing. Now people always start moving before, wait and say, until I say, okay, move. All right, so now I'm going to, some of us are going to go downstairs to the basement floor. And Ellen is it open? It is open. Great. Thank you, Nancy. And what we'll have is this whole side, okay, from this aisle, everybody over on this side, you will follow Ellen downstairs to the basement, and she will be there for any questions about the walking. But mostly what we'll do is just walk. And the room is big enough so that you can walk from the walls to the center, turn around and walk back to the walls so that and you walk parallel to one another, widthways, not lengthways. So the most number of people can get, and you only need a path the size of your body. And so you walk to the middle of the room and then walk back. The point is to walk comfortably so that you don't create a kind of tension in yourself, but to notice the sense of walking, the sense of movement, not how many laps am I doing. Don't have to do that. What the incremental steps that are most easily recognized are the lifting, the moving, placing, shifting, lifting, moving, placing. If it helps to use those as labels to connect you with the experience of where the labels are pointing, then fine. If the labels are confusing, then just notice the actual sensations themselves, knowing that you are walking, knowing that walking is occurring. That's all. The rest of you on my right side are welcome to either stay in this room or to go into the sanctuary, which is just down these little flights of stairs, and you can walk between the pews on your own. Okay? So what I would like you to do, now wait until is to take your chairs and put them all against the wall back here. Wait a second. I do this every time. And so we can clear off the entire floor from all the chairs, and then all of you that will go to your different assigned places, okay? Okay, so then go ahead and do that. Okay, so comments about the walking? Was it something that you felt like you could do, or was it more difficult than a sitting, or does it make as much sense, or what about the walking? Anyone? You concentrate on your walk?
When I walk anyway.
Uh-huh. You know what you're concentrating on, all right? When you're walking, you're concentrating on the physical sensations of walking, the experience of walking. Not just, this is a great walk, I love this park, boy, this is really nice, listen to all the bird, boy, this is really pretty, you know, not that.
I have a crack. I am a hen, but
So you don't want to be ahead. You want to be right where you are. That not even a single foot ahead. Because if you're ahead, you're not there. It's just that simple. You could be a quarter of an inch ahead. It doesn't matter. You're either here or you're not. It's an absolute.
Yeah.
You're either with yourself or you're not. You know, it's like a light switch. It's either on or off. And mindfulness, the cultivation of mindfulness, the willingness to keep coming back, has its own momentum. The more you spend actually feeling the sensation, the more the mind will then use that as the default position as opposed to thinking. So as we cultivate this more and more throughout the day, it will very slowly become our default, the place where we naturally reside. And then you will find that there's a kind of way that harmony is there, that you aren't losing yourself in worry or regret moment after moment, but you're just being present, not even thinking about what you're going to say. Like right now, I'm just feeling my body sitting. I'm not planning what I'm going to say, not rehearsing it. It just comes from the sense of space and energy of the collective. And that can become very much your resting place as well. It has to be practiced. That's an important point. It has to be practiced. It can't be neglected. I spent 16 years in hospice care and have seen far too many people die neglecting themselves. You don't want to die that way. What you put in now is how you're going to die. People die in character. The character you form now is the character you will die with. And for some of you, the character has already been resolved in that direction. So we just need to bring back some sense of warm-heartedness, some sense of personal and self-kindness, some sense of gentleness, some sense of ability to reside with ourself. Because dying is not going to let you die someplace else. And the more you carry in terms of your worry and your tension, that forms a particular field for your dying. So I don't want to... But it's that important. Now we're going to have fun here. It's going to be... There's going to be humor. There's going to be lightness. But you also have to hear the other side of the issue. You have to hear the sense that this is serious work. It can be fun, but it's serious. It's about our life. And when you know it's about your life, you'll begin to care about it. You'll care about the practice because you can see how the practice can mold your life. So it's not a small thing that we're doing. Any more? Yes.
I'm grateful for the reminder of the death part. So when you place your foot, are you placing the whole foot, or are you trying to have that same experience of heel toe that the back foot has with the front foot?
Stay very simple. The key words here are simple and easy. Okay, stay simple and easy. Don't overthink the process. It's just what you're feeling, whatever the sensations are. If you don't feel very many, that's okay. Just be patient with yourself. See if you can pick out the major components. Lifting, moving, placing, shifting. Right? Just see if you can feel what is behind each of those words. Lifting, moving, placing, shifting. Lifting. So when you lift the foot, okay, moving, placing, I feel that. Shifting, okay. So you... There are a lot of... Let's give some. Yes, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was raising to make sure.
Okay, go ahead.
I found it much more difficult than sitting. When I'm sitting, I'm closing my eyes and with myself and everyone around me is doing the same. And I'm not distracted. I don't feel self-conscious.
Right.
As soon as I'm starting to walk, I feel incredibly silly.
Yes.
I feel.
Yes. Right, okay. Okay, so don't say you can't be mindful. Say it's difficult to be mindful. We're not going to close the door on anything. So her point was that it's more difficult for walking because she feels silly, she feels conscientious, self-conscious, and all of that. And that is what we carry with us. In fact, it is all of those self-generated problems that keep us from being ourselves. Wonder what he's thinking of me. Oh my God, I must look ridiculous. It's that self-referencing in terms of the image we want and in terms of what we think other people are seeing of that image that keeps us from ever feeling aligned with ourselves. What does the word authentic mean? I don't care what people... What, you don't like me. I'm sorry you don't like me. I will listen to feedback on why you don't like me, but I'm not going to carry that around as some tortured image. Neither, if I know what I'm doing and I have the integrity to know that this is an important practice, and someone looks at me and says, oh, that guy, you look ridiculous. Okay, to your eyes that may be true, but into my authenticity, that's my barometer. That's the plumb line that I move. You see? And we're moving towards the plumb line of our authenticity, and what you move through is exactly what you're experiencing. All the things that has kept us from that plumb line. Wonder what he's thinking about me. Oh my God, I've got to change my mind. Oh, like Annie Hall. I'm showing my age. So it's just, okay. So that's part of the thinking where the thinking caused the problem. We're going to go on the experience. When we're just with the experience, there's no problem. The thinking is just stuff, but we're with the actual movement. And we let the thinking be extra. So we don't put the weight of our response or our identity in with the thinking. We rest it on the experience itself and let the thinking go. And with it goes all of the self-referencing. And what comes back is an authentic action. Yes. Yes. Someone who hasn't spoken, you haven't spoken, have you?
No.
No, you. Yes. Yes.
Well, I was feeling some of the things that she was feeling, but the most difficulty that I had was just belting, trying to take it slow enough where I could pay attention to what was happening. And then I wasn't walking like that.
Right. The balancing, right, right.
What felt comfortable that I got the same sensation was just if I just stood side by and just moved my feet like that.
Yes. No, but you know, when you start making your walking from an involuntary response to a voluntary one, where you're actually noticing what's going on and putting it under your own influence, then there's a certain awkwardness that everyone feels, and you get out of balance. It's just a phase. It's a phase. That kind of out-of-balanceness is a phase. When you relax with it a little more, you'll find that you can walk very easily and not be out of balance like that. So just continue. When you move at a more rapid pace, you're not going to be aware of the lifting, moving pace, and you'll just notice the swinging of your legs as you walk down the street. Just left, right, left, right, left, right, like that. And it won't feel so self-conscious after a while. Hmm? Now, the main obstacle in doing any of this is going to be boredom. This is ridiculous. What am I doing this for? Kind of the... And that is the line of defense that the mind creates to keep you from moving into anything new. You'd much rather spend your time thinking, enjoying, looking at, turning on the TV, doing other things that create the stimulation and the intensity of the stimulation that allows us to feel as if we're alive through the stimulation. And when we are with ourselves, the stimulation isn't there. The simplicity of heart is there, but not the stimulation that we have become dependent upon. So the level that we go through is a kind of boring response, which initially took us away from the harmony and the self-focus that led us into the whole sense of needing more and more and upping the amplifying volume of things to keep us feeling frenetically alive. We're coming back to the sense of just living with ourselves in a very simple way. And the mind is going to hate that and put up every defense possible because it's learned to be dependent upon things that are outside of it. And I'll talk much more about that next week. So there's another hand back here, someone who's... Only people who haven't asked questions. Yes, go ahead.
Physically self-conscious person, I was really surprised to find that this was a way
You're not. You're not doing it. This particular woman found it to be fun for her and found that the stairs were particularly interesting. Any action, when you bring your attention, you see, boredom is the lack of attention. When you actually bring your attention to the simplest motion of walking upstairs or the movement of the hand, sometimes just, it can be so interesting. What's going on there? And the sensation of it, you giggle because you aren't focused. Focus in on it and you'll understand what is meant by something being interestingly easy and simple, not simple-minded. You see how this patience, how patience is nurtured in the practice? You're not trying to go anywhere. You're not pulling, you're not a harnessed horse pulling at its reins. You're just being present to the experience. That's also called sensitivity, open-heartedness. When you begin to notice your heart is affected. Your heart will never be affected by things it doesn't notice. When you listen to a sound, you listen to the sound of something. Really listen. Then you can be affected. The reason we are keeping ourselves from that level of sensitivity is that we don't want to be affected. Because to be affected with an A means that we'll have to change. Means that we will become something new through being affected by something. And we don't want to change. We want to stay the way we are. Well, the way we are is what brought us into this class. If that was so good, why'd you come? Because most of us yearn deeply for that level of involvement with life. And we don't know how to access it. And we have to go through every defense that the mind has created in order to access it. All of the rubbish we've put between ourselves and trying to be consistently the same. So now we're just going to open our senses and see what happens. And you know what happens? Basic goodness, basic kindness. That's what happens. Now I want to stop for a moment and I want to talk about a different aspect. I want to talk about homework and I want to talk about dana. First, dana, D-A-N-A, is a Pali word that means generosity. The $50 you pay in order to hold the cost to a minimum is just to pay for the room rental, the day-long rental, and the working organization of SIMS, Seattle Insight Meditation Society. None of that money goes to me. I am a full-time meditation teacher. This is what I do full-time. Why? Because I think it's the most important thing I can possibly do in my life. But I have bills to pay, mortgages, and all the bills that everyone else has. And I then put out a basket that we'll put out at the that says Donna for Rodney. And there is no amount suggested. If you don't have money, that's okay. But if you have money that you'd like to place in that Donna basket, that will go for me. And that will allow me to continue to practice and to teach. And I am supported entirely by the generosity of other people. I have no salary, nothing, except what other people give me. And my life works from that point of view. But it takes responsibility and accountability from you to be willing to do that. And that's how this particular tradition has gone for 2,500 years. It has always been sustained by the lay community, either for the monks who are totally dependent upon the lay community for their clothing, their shelter, their food. Every day they go out on alms round and collect food, and then they just eat that, and that's what sustains them. And now that we've come back and brought this tradition outside of the monastery into the lay life, we're trying to make it work exactly on that footing, through the generosity of your support. If it means something to you, oftentimes the heart wants to give back. So the Donna Basket will be there every week. Donna, D-A-N-A. It's an important component of this teaching. And again, that money will be for me. Homework. Sit. What I want you to do, I'm not going to tell you how long to sit this week, but I want you to create a place in your apartment or your house, your home, for sitting. A corner of the room, or maybe if you're affluent enough, a whole room itself for sitting. You can put a little picture of Christ or whoever you want, or no, nothing at all. Maybe just a flower, or maybe just your sitting arrangement. So set that up and decide a good time when you can sit. After this week, this is the only week in which I'm not going to tell you a time. After this week, we're going to be sitting 30 minutes every day. So if you'd like to sit that long starting this week, you're welcome. But what I want you to do is to pick a time that you can consistently sit every day. And this week, get yourself up and go to that place and sit there. Decide how long you can sit there before you go. Today I have 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Today I only have 2 minutes. And then go and stay that length of time to begin to condition a reference of that place and sitting and the consistency of bringing that into the hierarchy of all the things we do. This is going to become a priority, and we're going to bring it into as a priority this week. So does everybody understand that? And then just follow the breath. Doesn't matter if it's hard or difficult, or just stay with it and do it every day. Okay? Get 8 hours sleep. The third is we're going to establish a marker. A marker is some activity we do every single day, and we're going to establish that activity and make it conscious. So let's say brushing the teeth. Hang a little sign on your toothbrush that says, be mindful while brushing, or be mindful. And then notice what you're brushing when you're brushing. The taste of the toothpaste. That this activity is the walking meditation activity, except it's done brushing. So I put the toothpaste on my toothbrush. I put the water. I feel the water on my hand. I start brushing. I know exactly what I'm doing when I'm brushing, where I'm located. I know exactly everything that's occurring. I'm not thinking about what I'm doing after I get finished brushing. I'm only brushing. Okay, brushing could be one activity. But the marker is some, we're going to have 6 markers. And the point of the marker is that we establish attention for ourselves at that point. Another marker could be when you stick your key in your car, before you've turned it on. Just pause. Take 10 seconds. Ground yourself with your breath. And then start the motor up from that sense of pause, and then drive as consciously as you can from that marker on. Another marker could be before you get out of bed. The alarm goes off, put it on snooze, but don't go back to sleep. Follow your breath so that you can get out of your bed from a sense of attention and alertness and awareness. And then let the marker go as far as it can into the next component of your day. So do people understand what a marker is? It's an activity in which we're nourishing awareness, and we're going to try to extend that awareness after you've finished brushing. Try to maintain that sense of awareness. You probably won't be able to even leave the bathroom before you've lost yourself, but that's okay. The more you nourish this thing, the more it'll nourish you and come back for you. It's a cultivation of a particular quality and aspect of mind. So does everybody understand that? No, one marker this week. So the 3 homeworks. And every week I'll add another component to your homework. So you've got to get this homework down so that you can be ready for the next homework. And I'll bring in little homework sheets, and they'll be up on the web. And if you miss a week, you can go and listen to the talk for that week and hear the instructions, which will also be on the web, and the homework will be up. So that it'll all be up there as well. But yes. You can set a timer. That's a good thing. If you decide 10 minutes, you have a little watch or something. That's probably the best way to do it. Some people can just put a clock down there and sit and just, you'll get a sense of how long you have been as you begin to practice for more and more. Yes?
So Mark is just beginning something. We're not marking ending it. Right? You're just going to start and be conscious of it. You're not going to say, now I'm going to stop being conscious.
No. Why would you say, now I'm going to stop being conscious?
Because then you're, you know, I mean, if you, instead of just passing out, so to speak, you at least have some closure.
No, you don't want to ever stop yourself from being conscious. You'll find that the more conscious you are, the more harmonious your life becomes. So the marker establishes the point in which you begin, but don't establish a closure to it. Just go as far as you can. It'll close itself out, believe me, real fast. Yes, another question? That's fine. You go every day. Yeah, it's fine. I mean, on weekends, I mean, you usually want some place that's familiar and accessible enough. But if you have one in the office and one at home, that's fine.
And this sitting place is only for meditation?
Well, I mean, I don't know how big your house is, but if you, well, then you can't do that.
Okay.
So you'd be practical. This is practical. Okay. But then when you do sit, you want to clear off that little space and have, you know, so that you bring some, and take your shoes off, so that you bring some sense of dignity to the spot. It carries its own sacredness. Huh?
An intention.
And an intention, exactly. Very good. Nicely said. Yes. Yes.
As far as establishing the time that you can sit, can you alter the schedule if you keep it consistent? Like if I agree Monday through Friday, I'll do it.
Yes. Yes, the question is about consistent. The question is about finding a consistent time to sit and having that alter. Yes, make it fit your own schedule. But for most people, they find that if they first get out of bed and they just go right to it, or last thing at night, then they can create, they're going to have to, something's going to have to go. You know, maybe a television program. Survivor. Give it up. Okay, so I'd like to get you out of here right at 9. I want to thank you all for coming. I want to encourage you now to do your homework, okay? And we'll start again 7 o'clock sharp next Tuesday right here. Thank you all very much. And the Donna Basket, if you will remember the Donna Basket, I would appreciate it.